Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. BetterHelp is the world's largest therapy service, and it's 100% online. With BetterHelp, you can tap into a network of over 25,000 licensed and experienced therapists who can help you with a wide range of issues. To get started, you just answer a few questions about your needs and preferences in therapy. That way, BetterHelp can match you with the right therapist from their network. Then you can talk to your therapist however you feel comfortable, whether it's via text, chat, phone, or video call. You can message your therapist at any time and schedule live sessions when it's convenient for you. If your therapist isn't the right fit for any reason, you can switch to a new therapist at no additional charge. With BetterHelp, you get the same professionalism and quality you expect from in-office therapy, but with a therapist who is custom-picked for you, more scheduling flexibility, and at a more affordable price. Get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/TheBarn. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TheBarn.
What's up? This is Slug from Atmosphere, and you are listening to the Midwest Mixtape Podcast.
You love the people that love you. You hear the music they move to. You give your all to the fall through. But you don't know, you don't know, you don't know, you don't know. You love the people that love you. You hear the music they move to. You give your
another night feel like the worst one. You didn't even count your tips yet, but you can tell that it ain't no big step. I don't see why you so nice to customers.
Hi, and welcome to the Midwest Mixtape Podcast, live from the Barn Studio. You got the Mox here, and I'm joined with a special guest online right now. We have Slug from Atmosphere. Slug, how are you, man?
I am swell. I'm doing good. It's a beautiful day. How you doing?
Doing really well. It's 5 days from this recording. You're going to be in St. Louis, Missouri. First night of the tour at the Pageant, Wednesday, April 10th. Doors are at 7, shows at 8. Atmosphere's Tour de Friends tour, part due. Looking forward to having you in town.
I'm looking forward to being there, man. I feel like it's been too long since the last time we were able to come and visit St. Louis.
Yeah, and you've played St. Louis a number of times. What are some of the venues, if you remember? I hate to put you on the spot, but what are some of the other venues that you played?
Let me think. The Galaxy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The Pageant a number of times. They've been a very strong supporter of us for the last probably 15 years. It's been at the Pageant. I think the last time that we played anywhere outside of the Pageant was the Galaxy was the last play before the Pageant, and that was 05. So that lets you know how long we've been going to the Pageant. Both rooms at the Pageant. I've done the small room. I've done the big room. There was another spot that was down Del Mar from the Pageant. I don't know if there's still a spot, but they had a bar in the front, and then the back room, they had a very small club that probably held like 150 people. If you said the name, I'd probably recognize it, but off the top of my head, I can't remember. And truthfully, I feel like I went looking for it once when I was playing the Pageant. Like, I rode my bike down there to see if it was still there, and I couldn't even find it, so it might not even exist anymore.
Okay, so I'm going to throw this at you. Was it the Creepy Crawl?
No, but I have played the Creepy Crawl.
Okay,
thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, thank you for that memory that I've tried to block out. I also played at the school. There's a school somewhere, a college. We played there, and I remember Jim Schaff was the promoter, and he body slammed me that night on the stage. I landed on my neck, and I still suffer from that. I should get a lawyer.
Basically, we've named all the St. Louis clubs at this point. You've played pretty much all of them, and you have a career that's, you know, I mean, how many years into this thing are you by now? Like, you know, even like trying to find a balance, which I think, you know, the masses kind of first heard of you, at least that's the case for the Midwest Mixtape Podcast. That's over 20 years old, you know? So this career that you've been on, it's been quite a journey, I would imagine.
Yeah, man. We're coming up on 30 years, actually, of me and Anthony working together. Me and him, we started making music together in 1995. And had no idea that this is where it was going to go. And when I say that, I mean that. I'm not just talking out the side of my neck. But, like, you know, when you're an artist, you have two choices. Either you're going to be famous and blow up and be massive and ride in limousines and Word Up magazine and all that, or you're going to be unknown and, you know, sleeping on couches, and you're going to be that martyr who's like, you know, the underdog that's just there for the people. We didn't even know that the space that we occupy existed. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. like, I don't even know what you would call it. We're kind of like the blue collar, upper middle class rapper. You know what I mean? And it's like, and it's funny because people will pin those words to me because of what the lyrics are and not even realize that, you know, that's actually what the life is too. You feel me? It's like we have careers, but it involves us continuing to work. You feel me? It's like in order to even hold on to what you got, there's this like kind of like ghost on your shoulder saying, all right, you got to go to work today. You got to go to work today. You got to go to work today. Whereas when we were younger, we figured either you bust your ass for nothing or you make it. You know what I mean? Whereas now we realize, oh, there's this other space. And truth be told, man, it's kind of comfortable to occupy this space because this is what I knew as a child watching my parents. In fact, my parents struggled more than I struggle, definitely. But just watching them and watching their struggle kind of set me up for this. And I didn't even realize that at the time. You know what I mean? Like, I thought I was going to do this. And just like everybody, you have dreams, whether you're an athlete or you're going into acting or music or sculpting, paint, whatever. When you're doing something for the benefit of the viewer, you have this, there's this notion that you're going to obtain some sort of like level or status of being able to eventually like sit back and just kind of like watch the world go. And so to have an artist's life, but it's the type of life that, you know, it's like the pressure's on, you got to keep making art. You know what I mean? It's a very comfortable space to occupy, you know? So therefore we have to challenge ourselves or scare ourselves with how we occupy that space. You know what I mean? Like, we got to come up with new rules to every time we go out, every time we make an album, we set up a couple of hurdles that we have to jump over, not on some let's reinvent the wheel or anything, but more like, how do we challenge ourselves so that we can make this feel like something to us? Because, you know, once, I don't even know how many albums Anthony has made with me. We're well into the double digits, but we're probably getting close to 20 if we haven't passed that. And so you got to kind of remember to figure out how to scare yourself, because otherwise you're just kind of like, you're just looping, you know?
I'd say your path to success couldn't have been an easy one, right? But you're talking about, you know, this space that you exist in now. I think one of the things that you get most recognized for is that you created that space. You know, I know a lot of independent artists are out there doing it now, but that wasn't always the case, especially in the 2000s, where you almost had to have a major record label deal to make it work. And you guys kind of created that space that a lot of people have followed since then.
You know, I'm aware of that. I acknowledge that. I feel like, obviously we didn't do it on our own. We had the help of the team that I still have, you know, at the label Rhymesayers, as well as the rest of the artists that were involved with Rhymesayers. But also it was a vibe. There was other, you know, you had on the East Coast, you had people who were doing the same thing as us. Which eventually resulted in Definitive Jux or Third Earth, or, you know, the different versions of us. I wouldn't say versions, because some of them were doing it unknowing that we were doing it, but just the fact that there was a vibe in the late 90s of people kind of pushing back on the idea of needing a label, because you did need a label. And so that fueled us, because no labels were looking at us. And so that pushed us even harder to be like, well, then, you know what, we'll show you. And, you know, that "we'll show you" energy, I think, is responsible for a lot of the beauty in this world. Because when you finally get that opportunity to show them, you show everything. You show the whole story. You know what I mean? And when I think of groups like on the West Coast, you had Hyro and or Living Legends, Project Blowed. You had people who, In a similar vibe, similar fashion, and even at the similar time, we're doing it as well. And maybe we weren't all aware of each other at the very beginnings of it, but once we realized that we had, there were like-minded colleagues out there or friends to make, you know, that just empowered it even more. That just fueled it even more, because then that's what validated you and made you realize, yes, I'm on the right path, because I'm not the only one. we all see this, you know what I mean? And so we did create something in the late 90s. You know, there is a story there to tell for somebody, whoever can figure out how to articulate it, about what happened, because I do see its reverberations today in what people do. I see it in some of the major stars of today, some of the major people, the major players out there right now. I see elements of what we were all a part of in the late 90s.
You know, I'm in the podcast game, so I think of somebody like Joe Rogan, who's the biggest podcaster in the world, but he has the middle finger to the formula that was written for success as a podcaster, you know, and he kind of does it his own way. You know, another Midwest rapper that gets a lot of respect in that game is Tech N9ne. We actually recently just spoke to Tech N9ne, where he gets a lot of credit for, you know, having that ownership in his career and kind of making things, making the choices himself and doing things his own way. Does that, you know, having that ownership of your craft and your art, is that important to you? And like, where do you see that going from here?
Oh man, I don't know how to answer that question, because it's like, you don't, you know, when you stand as close to your own stuff, it's harder for you to have the kind of perspective that like you might have. So what you see is going to be very different from what I see through all the many filters of life that I have, you know, whether it's like my sore body or my frustrations or my stresses or whatever I'm going through at the time, my optimism and my pessimism, et cetera. It's a different, when it gets through that, all that filter, it's hard for me to like really be able to embrace it the way that you're articulating it. You know, for me, it's, I have to be reminded, like you did, oh, you guys did something in the 90s that is still relevant today. It's like, I don't think about that unless I'm speaking with somebody and they bring it up. So rather than freestyling and giving you an answer that might not be as real, I would just say, you know, I'm still day to day learning and figuring out where this is going to go. And when it's over with, that's when I'm really going to stop and take a look back on what it all was. And who knows, like I had referenced earlier, maybe I'll be the one to write the story or to present the bigger picture of what was happening in the 90s. And that is only if, like, you know, 10 years from now, people still want to know that story. And I didn't mean to date it by saying 10 years, because who knows how long I'm gonna keep going. But once I'm done, I think then it's okay for me to finally look back on it all and take it in. As for now, what I prefer to do is I'm just looking at the immediate step right in front of my face. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard enough for me to even consider the fact that there's probably going to be more touring this year, because I'm just about to go on this tour. And this is what I'm dealing with today, is this tour that's happening, you know? So it's the same with the rest of my life. You know, when I'm raising my kids, I'm not stopping to look at my 10-year-old to think about what's he going to be like at 13. You know, I'm like here with the 10-year-old right now. I'm here with the 6-year-old right now. And I'm just trying to be as present as possible for them. And so I guess in a weird way, my career is a lot like that, where I'm just trying to be as present as possible in the moment and make the right choices in the moment based off of, you know, either what I've learned, what's informed me, or just instinct.
With your career being as long as it has been, you've seen the music business change, I'm sure. You know, with that, having to kind of call an audible on how you do things, you know, where it maybe used to be record sales that would be income driven, you know, help with income. Now maybe it's more merch and doing shows. And it's like, you know, having concerts and tours and shows now seems like imperative into an artist's career. What do you think the state of the music business is right now?
Well, first and foremost, I would say there is nothing in the music business that has actually changed from my time in it. And I might even go as far as to say, you know, just from how I've had the opportunity to also watch a lot of, even prior to my career, I was involved in music. I loved music. I worked in record stores. I paid attention. And I'm also somewhat of a historian. So when I look at, you know, what I've viewed and learned about hip hop specifically, but also some of the other genres. Bottom line is this, man, the owners are still the owners and the workers are still the workers. And the listeners or the people who want to support the workers end up really putting a lot of those resources into the hands of the owners. Now, we could talk about how, you know, maybe nowadays artists don't need to depend on major labels like they used to, but really all that meant was we shifted some of the ownership from a major label to an indie label, or from an indie label to a streaming service, or from a streaming service to, you know, and so on and so forth. Most of the artists are not also owners And for as long as that is the case, then this is going to continue to be, you know, kind of this type of an industry. You know, there was a time when, you know, let's say like 500 years ago, I would show up in your town with my little lute and play a song in hopes of getting a bowl of soup and a place to rest my head for the evening. And that was as pure as it could get. Since then, since somebody in the, I don't know if it was like the 50s, I think, invented the 7-inch, the 45, everything changed from there. And the owners continue to make the lion's share. The artists continue to struggle to survive. I got a friend who oh, you know what, even better, there's I'm gonna say the wrong name. I can't remember exactly who said this, but there's a pretty famous quote that says, you know, the manager's children go to Yale and the artist's children go to jail. And that's real. And so for me, I'm just trying to break that. I'm trying to break that cycle to try to figure out how to, you know, make it a different story for me as an individual. And I think most artists do want to break that. You know what I mean? But like the you know, even Prince was on that. He was talking about that. You know what I'm saying? Like that was a big part of his later path was preaching this gospel about how people needed to become more independent. Now, everybody thinks like this now. Everybody is so learned that, you know, you can go from a creator and get your stuff direct to your fans, whether it's music or shoes or whatever. You can, but it's hard. It's a lot of work. And it's hard as an artist to be able to go, okay, I want to focus on making all my art, but I got to learn business. I got to learn social media. I got to learn how to book tours. It's hard. And so that's why we end up turning to other agencies to help us do those things. But, you know, at the end of the day, all those agencies make more than these artists. I don't care who you are. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, I don't know nothing about Taylor Swift's business, but if she's making all that money, I do know somebody else is making a bunch of money off her. You feel me? Whether it's Live Nation or whoever, you know, and I'm not even saying that's wrong. That's just the game. If you're going to play this game, it's best to come into it knowing that, hey, there are certain resources that you're going to need. And if you ain't going to create those resources out of thin air and you're going to turn to somebody else, then you're giving them some of the resources that are coming back on the return. And half the time, you got to pay them off before you see your money. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, you got to cover your expenses before you get to play with any, you know. And so I think one of the most healthiest things that we can do is learn how to just budget our lives so that the money is not a make or break situation. You know, one of the things that I was pretty lucky with, I'll say lucky, fortunate, however you want to word it, was that when things started to happen for me, I was able to get my expenses down to like very little. I had a good situation with my rent. You know what I'm saying? I didn't own a car. I had a son, so I kept a job to make sure I could provide for my son and cover my little rent. So that way, when money started to come in as an artist, I didn't have to like throw it all at anything. You know, I wasn't addicted to shoes. I don't care about jewelry. I didn't, you know, I wasn't eating tons of, you know, indulgent foods. I just was lucky to be in the right place in the right time to be able to actually build a little nest egg. Therefore, I could use that nest egg to help budget some of my future ideas, whether it be shooting a video with my own money or booking a tour with my own money, putting together, you know, getting the production together, not having to turn to nobody to be like, hey, I need some money so I can get some lights for this tour. You know what I'm saying? But being able to like save my money so that I could just keep doubling down on and gambling on the job to keep more fingers out the pot. Now, with all that said, I'm not saying I did it correctly, because just like any other artist, I'm still out here trying to figure it out and learning. Like I said, I'm learning as I go. You know what I'm saying? But I do think that if you can figure out how to take money off of the top of your list of priorities, then I do think you will also take some of the stress off of there, which enables you to be a lot more free when it's time to create, which ultimately is what it comes down to. And it's crazy because I just said a whole bunch of stuff and never even really boiled it down to that part, the most important part, the creation. There's nothing I do that I enjoy more than writing a song. And I don't mean that as offense to any of my family or my loved ones or my friends or anything, but really, I am at my purest when I am by myself, sitting down with a pen and a pad or in front of a laptop or any sort of device I can use to write down my thoughts. Those are the moments that I live for. And those are the things that fuel me. So when I have that as my, that is what fuels me and inspires me, it just becomes circular in that I can be inspired to make something, to inspire me, to make something, to inspire me, and so on and so forth. And if you can find that, that should be on the top of the priority list here. Then all that other stuff can fall under it, you know? And I know that hearing me say that, it falls with a tone of saying, you know, money's not important. And I realize that I'm in a position of privilege at this point to be able to say something like that. But it ain't because I'm rich. It's because I'm budgeted. It's because I grew up with poor-ass parents who I seem not ever figure it out. You know what I'm saying? And so it's because I made that a priority. Figure out how to budget my world and my life so that I can not always be stressing on money. And it's crazy too, bro, because I still stress about money. You know what I'm saying? I think that's just the American way. But I think I have bought myself the privilege to stress a little less by just making sure that I, you know, stay within my means for this long. You know, I haven't had to pivot and sink a bunch of money into dope or something. You know, you see a lot of people get money and then they get worried about losing that money. So then they start to pivot and it's like, bro, you're getting dirty again after you've already legitimized yourself. And that's how you fall. That's how you see some people fall. You know what I'm saying? And so it's like, I can honestly say, like, I've been dirty. I know what that feels like from my youth. And ever since I was able to legitimize, man, you'll never see me go near any dirty shit again, because, you know, that's the easy way for them to get you. Holy moly, I have no idea how this conversation got to where it got, dude. I apologize, because I know this was not your question.
No, I was going to say, Slug is like the Dave Ramsey of hip hop, I think. Dropping
Who's
all
Dave Ramsey?
Oh, he's a financial advisor or something. But I think what you're saying is important, man. And I know you got to get out of here. You got a lot of press to do, and you got to get ready for this tour. This is Slug from Atmosphere on the Midwest Mixtape Podcast, live from the barn. You'll be coming into town soon, man. Wednesday,
yeah,
April
man,
10th.
I'm excited. I can't wait to get there. Yo, I would like to shout out Tef Poe real quick, and then just you guys, man. Thank you for giving me some time to speak my spit, to say some things, to express myself. It really means a lot to me that you guys care enough to talk to me, so thank you for that.
We'll see you when you come into town. Thanks, man.
Peace.
They love the taste of blood. I don't know what that means, but I know that I mean it. Maybe they're as evil as they seem, or maybe I only look out the window when it's scenic. Atmosphere finally made a good record. Yeah, right, that shit almost sounds convincing. The last time I felt as sick and contradictive as this was the last time we played a show in Cincy. Get real, they tell me. If only they knew how real this life really gets. They would stop acting like a silly bitch. They would respect the cock, whether or not they believed in it. Doesn't take much, and that's messed up, because these people do a lot of simple shit to impress us. While everyone was trying to outdo the last man, I was just a ghost trying to catch some Miss Pac-Man. Hello ma'am, would you be interested in some sexual positions and emotional investments? See, I'm not insane, in fact I'm kinda rational. When I be asking, yo, where did all the passion go? East Coast, West Coast, down south, Midwest. Nowadays everybody knows how to get fresh. Somebody give me a big yes.
Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. BetterHelp is the world's largest therapy service, and it's 100% online. With BetterHelp, you can tap into a network of over 25,000 licensed and experienced therapists who can help you with a wide range of issues. To get started, you just answer a few questions about your needs and preferences in therapy. That way, BetterHelp can match you with the right therapist from their network. Then you can talk to your therapist however you feel comfortable, whether it's via text, chat, phone, or video call. You can message your therapist at any time and schedule live sessions when it's convenient for you. If your therapist isn't the right fit for any reason, you can switch to a new therapist at no additional charge. With BetterHelp, you get the same professionalism and quality you expect from in-office therapy, but with a therapist who is custom-picked for you, more scheduling flexibility, and at a more affordable price. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/the barn. That's betterhelp, H-E-L-P.com/the barn.